All right, back on the Young Turks. Mark Anthony writes in, Django Unchained is bringing that fire. We were just talking about that during the break. You know, I'm about to sneeze.
Are you the TYT dragon? Don't sneeze fire.
Well, you might have heard the news. We do have some dragons on our side now. Anyway, yes, I'm in a great mood personally, but the news stories got me pissed. Anyway, Ishka Bibble says, my brother was stationed in Guam while he was a Marine. This is terrible. Think of all of our people there too. Brian Newton says, two spoiled assholes with nukes who are raised on authoritarian propaganda, who know and act like they are above the law. Jesus, man. When you put it that way, it's even scarier. And Laura Gelsuzuna says, it needs to be easier to vote Saturday, Sunday, and Monday, mail-in ballots, etc. Look, I couldn't agree more with that. We should make voting as easy as possible. And I wouldn't, if we had a fair system, I would never exclude Republicans. Never. That is un-American, okay? So, and I would want them voting on Saturday, Sunday, Monday. But at a bare minimum, we cannot have the voter purges.
Can I just make a quick point about that? Where are all the little trolls that go to college campuses to do conservative speeches and then whine because people are protesting them? Because they're angry at that because they think, hey, it's violating my First Amendment rights. Now, we support them, right? We say that they have a place on a college campus, they should be allowed to speak. But are they equally upset about what's happening in Ohio? No.
No.
Of course not. They're not upset about that. Now, that is a real undemocratic action taken by lawmakers in Ohio, right? That has severe implications, negative implications for our democracy, but they're not upset about that. They don't speak out about that.
Yeah, it's funny how they only care about American principles when it applies to them and affects, by the way, their income.
Right.
Because those are not free speeches, they're paid speeches. Okay, I want to update you on from a poll that we asked about yesterday. Will Trump eventually fire John Kelly? Now, if you ask that in Washington, they say, no, square-jawed general, he's in great shape. Of course not, what do you mean? He's got this whole place in tip-top shape. Our audience believes there's a 91% chance that John Kelly will be fired by Trump. Only 9% say no.
Anyone can be fired by Trump at any moment, you never know.
Of course, he's filled with fired and fury.
Yeah.
All right, what's next?
All right. Donald Trump is using taxpayer money to employ staffers who only have one real responsibility, to gather positive news about him and then fetch him that information. All right, so recent reports indicate that there is a White House Director of Rapid Response, his name is Andy Hemming, and he is paid $89,000 a year just to look for good stories about Donald Trump and then make sure it gets delivered to the president, who has the thinnest skin of anyone on the planet, literally the top special snowflake in this country. So
I got to pause there because Anna made such a great point there. Think about how you have to be the snowflake of snowflakes to.
I need
to
positive.
Say, please, my feelings are hurt all the time by cable news. Please, somebody fetch me good news. Oh my God, I'm so special and tender. I don't want my feelings to be hurt. Please, somebody pay someone $89,000 a year just to fetch me good news about myself.
That is insane. I would be so incredibly embarrassed if the thought even crossed my mind. The fact that the most powerful person in the world is asking for this, who demands this. I mean, look, regardless of what your political ideology is, you have to admit that this is pretty pathetic. Let me give you more information though, okay? So news that he spends his day scouring radio, television, and the web for stories that celebrate the Trump agenda came from Trump's own allies. So this is information that was given by Trump's own allies. Jason Miller is one of those allies. He says, it's an important role. There's so much good news that's coming out of this administration that we have to continue pushing all of these positive messages ourselves to remind people there's a lot going on.
No, hold on, there's a couple of things there that are great. Number one, Jason Miller, very connected to the administration, obviously, was part of a huge part of Donald Trump's campaign. So they're not denying it. They admit that there is someone paid just to fetch good news for Donald Trump. Number two, remember, if they want to do, and I said even about Trump TV, you want to do your own propaganda, and let's not call it propaganda, you want to do marketing for yourself, no problem. But this is not going to the outside world. This is going to the commander in Snowflake.
No,
okay?
This is
it goes
insane.
Just to Trump. It's not for marketing purposes. It's just to make him feel better. He's like, goody, some people like me. Oh, that's so sad.
No, it gets better though. It gets so much better. Okay, so Vice spoke to three former White House staffers. I'm guessing these are individuals who might have gotten fired, but we don't know. They didn't disclose their information. And then one current White House staffer. And here is some more information that we know about Donald Trump and his demands for positive news coverage delivered to him. So apparently he gets a folder full of positive news about himself twice a day, one at 9:30 in the morning and then another at 4:30 in the morning. The folders are filled with, just pay attention, please, you're gonna love this. So the folders are filled with screenshots of positive cable news chyrons, okay? Admiring tweets, transcripts of fawning TV interviews, praise-filled news stories, and sometimes, just pictures of Trump on TV looking powerful.
Oh my God. Okay, so these packets, you know how normally he needs tweet size information? We just did a story yesterday about when briefing him on Afghanistan, they have to keep it to half a page because he can't concentrate. These packets are 20 to 25 pages.
Yeah.
Twice a day. When it's about him, he's like, oh, look at that picture of me. I look so good. Oh, that's the saddest thing I've ever heard. Oh my God, if somebody here at TYT said, Cenk, my job, and you're gonna have to pay me $89,000 for this, is to make a folder of you looking good and positive tweets about you, and you your pictures while you look commanding. It's the most pathetic thing I've ever heard. Of course I wouldn't want, which person who doesn't have the most fragile ego you've ever heard, the biggest snowflake in American history, wouldn't be disgusted by that?
Look, we know that Trump is the way he is, and he fires off at anyone who criticizes him or has anything negative to say, fires off on Twitter on a regular basis. But for me, I think it's fascinating, and I guess unsurprising, that people are willing to take that job, right? I get it, $89,000 a year is a lot of money, but how do you live with yourself? Like, how do you look at yourself in the mirror when you wake up in the morning and say, yeah, I succeeded, I'm doing something with my life. Like, you are stroking the ego of the largest snowflake in existence, right? And I don't know how you live with yourself, but anyway, there's more information in regard to what's going on. It's amazing. So another component is the one and only note that the communications department in the White House got in regard to these folders. Apparently the only note was, it needs to be more fucking positive.
Okay, there's every layer of the story is fantastic. Sarah Huckabee Sanders talking about the guy that prepares the folder says, Andy does an incredible job of finding those hidden gems. In other words, there's almost no positive news. He's gotta find hidden gems because there isn't any positive news to report and they know it. That's the White House press secretary. Then there's one person who's more pathetic, or two in the past. It's Reince Priebus and Sean Spicer. Mm-hmm. They apparently used to compete to deliver the folder to Trump. Because they know that Trump is a man child and that whoever gives him positive news, he's like, oh, okay, oh, Sean gave me the folder. Oh, I like Sean more now.
Yeah.
I like Sean more.
So this current White House staffer is the one who made this statement. He says Priebus and Spicer weren't in a good position and they wanted to show that they could provide positive coverage. It was self-preservation. How'd that work out for you?
And it didn't work either anyway, right? Because they were in a competition to kiss his ass,
oh my God,
to hand him the folder. Internally, a White House somebody who works at the White House says it was called the propaganda document. They know it. They're not denying it. Miller's not denying it. Sanders isn't. Then you go to Sean Spicer, and they said, "Hey, Sean, there's this story." He says, "While I won't comment on materials we share with the president, this is not accurate on several levels." In other words, it exists. I won't comment on it. If it didn't exist, he'd be like, that's an outrageous fake news story, right? That's mm-hmm. No, we never gave him the propaganda document. He says, well, I won't comment on it. In other words, it exists. It's inaccurate on several levels, not all levels. Okay. Dude, in other words, most of the story is true. Okay.
You know what's incredible to me? That Spicer doesn't go Django Unchained. Right?
But like, they might be, Annie. So
you think that they might be the leakers?
Oh, totally. That's why I said when he fired Reince Priebus, he in a lot of ways made a terrible mistake. Reince Priebus has all this dirt saved up from 7 months, and he doesn't mind leaking at all. So Spicer and Priebus are sitting out there, let alone now close to a dozen people who've been shivved by Donald Trump after they gave him loyalty. And they're like, oh, that's a shame. maybe I should call Politico, maybe I should call the New York Times, maybe I should call this guy and that guy.
You're probably right. Obviously, we're speculating as to whether or not they're the leakers, but I would go the more savage route. And instead of leaking, I would come out and be like, guess what? I worked for Donald Trump. Here's what goes on. Mm-hmm. Oh, I don't agree with Sean Spicer or Reince Priebus on a plethora of issues. And I can't even say that I like them as people, but I would certainly have much more respect for them if they came out, stopped defending him publicly and then maybe secretly stabbing him in the back, just publicly came out and said, yeah, he's a man child. I made a horrible mistake.
I know, but they're sleazy politicians. They work in politics. They're not going to do that because then they'll lose Trump voters for the rest of their lives, and they won't be able to get jobs as Republican Party officials or working for donors or anything like that. So
Trump's going to lose Trump supporters at some point. Okay.
I know. And by the way, if they think it is to their advantage to do it publicly, that is the minute that they will knife him publicly.
That's true.
Okay. Final thing for you guys is that. Former RNC official also admits, yes, there's the propaganda document. Yes, it's just filled with pictures of Trump looking good, according to him, and positive tweets and nonsense. But he says, but maybe it's good for the country that the president is in a good mood in the morning.
I just can't. When you thought it couldn't
get any sadder. If you're a conservative out there and you think you're an alpha male and you supported an alpha male.
God, that's such a good point.
This is the biggest beta move of all time. Okay, but I need emotional support. I need to feel good in the morning. Can you get me good tweets? Oh, your snowflake is melting.
All right, let's move on to some non-Trump news because there's quite a bit of it. Executives at Google made the decision to fire an engineer who wrote a memo questioning women in tech. Now, I take issue with the way that this story has been reported in the news, and I highly recommend that everyone actually read the memo that has been controversial because you might have a different perspective than what the media is telling you. But I do have the relevant portions of that memo for you, and then we'll have a discussion as to whether or not he should have been fired. Now, the engineer is James Damore. There he is. And again, he is the one who put out this memo internally and then got fired as a result. The memo did go viral, and it specifically had to do with diversifying the workplace and trying to be more inclusive of women in tech. Now, the memo called Google's ideological echo chamber, relied on certain gender stereotypes, like the notion that women are less interested in high-stress jobs because they are more anxious or suffer from more anxiety, to rationalize the gender gap in the tech industry. So, look, that is, I'm gonna keep it real, there is research indicating that women on average suffer from anxiety more than men do, and it's because of hormonal differences. I consider myself someone who's in favor of equality. I consider myself someone who believes in diversity in the workplace, but I don't believe that that is necessarily a stereotype because there is scientific evidence to back that up. However, we'll have a debate about this in just a second. Let me give you more information about what he wrote. So he wrote that openness directed toward feelings and aesthetics rather than ideas, women generally also have a stronger interest in people rather than things relative to men. So he lists the differences between men and women. And he does say throughout the memo, look, these are not, these are generalizations. So it's not to say that every woman is like this, but generally speaking, here are the differences between men and women, and it's playing a role in the gender gap in the tech industry. So later on in his memo, he describes what could be done to kind of mitigate the differences so you can be more inclusive of women. But again, he says that women are more interested in the aesthetics and being people pleasers. Yeah. That I think is a stereotype, but we'll continue. He says that women are different from men in that they believe in extroversion expressed as gregariousness rather than assertiveness, also higher agreeableness.
Look, so we're actually going to the worst parts there because I think all that is a crock of crap, okay? I think that's the worst part of his memo. Mm-hmm. I agree with you that the memo is more interesting than people are letting on.
Yeah, because here's the thing. Look, the media has, I don't want the media telling me what I should think about it. I wanted to read the original memo and I read it with an open mind and I wanted to see where it was coming from. The way the media is reporting it, it makes it seem like it's just this memo insulting women and treating them as if they're genetically inferior or biologically inferior to men. In reality, what he's doing, look, there are generalizations in there that I disagree with. However, what he's trying to do is show that there are differences between men and women. And if we want to be more inclusive of women in the workplace, well, then here are certain things that we could consider. So it wasn't this memo where he's like, women suck, man. I don't want women in the tech industry. They suck. And that's the way the media is reporting it. And it's just, I think it's unfair.
Well, so I'm more mixed on it than you are. So let me first talk about the positives. So look, he talks about left-wing bias, but he also talks about right-wing bias. And he's not an unsophisticated thinker, right? So it's not a knucklehead online being like, oh man, men have it so bad. You know, intellectual arguments that are stereotypes, etc. Right? And he sometimes he cites stats like men, by the way, suffer 93% of the work-related deaths. So they are picking jobs that are in some ways certainly different than women. Mm-hmm. Well, that's an interesting point, and that's a stat. And you could interpret it in different ways, but you don't fire someone for citing a stat. And he says things like feminism has made great progress in freeing women from the female gender role, but men are still very much tied to the male gender role. If we as a society allow men to be more feminine, then the gender gap will shrink. So that's a really interesting point.
Right.
Here's another interesting point near the end in one of his footnotes. Men are expected to be strong, to not complain and deal with problems on their own. Men's problems are more often seen as personal failings rather than victimhood due to our gendered idea of agency. This discourages men from bringing attention to their issues. Perfectly fine point. Okay,
yeah.
So it's an interesting memo in those regards. But I think that when he gets into the so-called biological differences between men and women, that's where I think he totally goes off the rails. So now it's one thing to cite the stat about work-related deaths. That's a perfectly fine stat and makes sense. And it's an interesting conversation to have around that stat. Well, and are men choosing certain jobs, women choosing certain jobs? And Anna and I have discussed a million times on the show that 77 cents on the dollar that women make for per men is not about the same job.
Exactly.
There's a ton of factors in there, and you have to look at it holistically. But when he starts getting into women likes things and guys like ideas, that's not backed up by overwhelming research. You can't generalize like that based on weak sauce. There's one study I kind of think said that. That is not a conclusion you can reach.
Let me jump in, because the thing is, you're right. He makes good points in there that I think should have led to a discussion within the company, as opposed to Google freaking out and then immediately firing him because they got a little bit of criticism, right? However, I do agree with you that there were generalizations there that are not backed up by evidence. There were points made about the differences between men and women that are backed up by evidence, the anxiety point being one of them. But here's one thing that I completely disagree with, right? So his argument is, well, men are just more assertive than women, which is why they're more likely to get paid more, they're more likely to get hired for these positions. And look, that is not a biological difference between men and women. That is a social conditioning issue. Because when a woman is assertive, when a woman is strong, when a woman is aggressive, the way society treats her is very different from the way society treats a man who's just as aggressive or just as assertive. And so we need to understand, you know, that is an issue as well. And by the way, I'm not denying at all that there is an issue with sexism in the tech industry. I actually experienced it firsthand when I moderated a panel at a conference called Collision in New Orleans. I had to moderate a panel with two Silicon Valley CEOs. And they were horrendous to me on stage, would not let me speak, insulted me in front of a crowd of people, and I could not believe the way that they treated me there. So I'm not gonna deny that there is an issue, but what I want is a dialogue. And unfortunately, when you immediately fire him and don't have that dialogue, I don't think that leads to real progress.
So look, don't get me wrong, he is not a moderate. He's definitely on the conservative end of the spectrum. He calls himself a classic liberal, which means he's really conservative. Okay, that's like an excuse people use. And he says things like, the same compassion for those seen as weak creates political correctness. Okay, well, number one, that's total nonsense. And number two, he's in essence there saying women are perceived to be weak and need to be protected, hence we do all these diversity programs for them, etc. And all it is political correctness. Now, or it could be that they have been historically disadvantaged. Now, that is context, and it should be something discussed and debated as to how to address that. So, for example, why did we do civil rights and affirmative action in the first place? Because whites had almost all the jobs, and understandably, they would want to give it to their kids. So you're a longshoreman, you want to give it to your kid. Now, in order to do that, you can't let blacks have that job because you're going to give it to your white kid. So you could say, oh, now I can't give it to my white kid, you're discriminating against me. No, we were discriminating against blacks and not letting him in that job in the first place. So it's a matter of how you frame the issue, and you could say, oh, that's just political correctness, and you're just being weak by giving into it. No, there was obvious historic discrimination, and there have been against women as well. So I don't agree with his framing, and it's interesting, he also asked for a safe space. He says that this creates a, quote, psychologically unsafe environment, end quote, for men. So, okay, that's fascinating. Mm-hmm. Again, I'm not saying the guy's a monster, but if I'm the boss, I gotta say, hey, listen, you wanted to start a conversation about the disparities and that could lead to a different pay scale and have a conversation around what jobs women seek. Right. That's an interesting intellectual debate, and I'm not gonna fire you over that, even if it's against our company policies and et cetera, right? But when you say, imply that women are weak. And you know, there's a tiny bit of research on the anxiety thing. It is not conclusive, so I don't agree with you that. And the way he framed it is even worse. He says neuroticism in describing women, higher anxiety, lower stress tolerance. So now what have you done? You've now, if we say that's an okay thing to say, now at a meeting when a woman says something, and we haven't taken any action on this.
Right.
Then, okay, are people wondering, oh, is it because she's neurotic? Is it because she's weak?
I get that.
Is it, oh, or is she just being agreeable, right?
I know, but here's the thing. I think that, unfortunately, the way that companies react to these types of memos or these types of comments, it ends up being counterproductive. Because I agree with you, there were things written there that I disagree with. But I'm much more interested in having a conversation about it than, you know, kicking them out of that conversation and then pretending like that type of ideology doesn't exist, right? Because it exists.
I know,
are people working at Google right now who completely agreed with that memo, right? And so if they think that this problem is now gone because they fired him, they're absolutely wrong. And by the way, look, I looked into the anxiety thing because I don't want to accept it. I'm a woman. I don't want to accept that I'm going to suffer. I'm more likely to suffer anxiety compared to men. But it was not just, you know, some maybe random study. It was a study done by a researcher at the University of Cambridge. They found through their research that women are twice as likely to suffer from anxiety, and it's specifically because of hormonal differences. And so,
but it's just one study, and I'm not dismissing the study.
Right.
But you can't draw gigantic conclusions and then base your hiring decisions or argue that your hiring decisions should be based on just one study.
I agree with you on that. But again, that's why it's important to have a conversation.
I know, but look, so it's a little different. Now, I argued that Rush Limbaugh shouldn't be fired when he said outrageous things. You remember Don Imus back in the day when the nappy-headed comment,
yes,
right?
Yes, I remember.
I argued he shouldn't be fired. I argued that exactly, bring him in, let's have a conversation. Let's have a conversation on air. Whether it's the right or the left, Al Sharpton, I've disagreed with him plenty. I don't think he should have been fired, okay? But they're not doing talk shows, which is the whole point of a talk show, is to have those conversations. The whole point of media is to have these discussions. College campuses, we agree that conservatives should come on college campuses. That's an area where you're open to having a conversation. This is it's a private work environment where it is super important to them to be able to attract top level talent who are both males and females. If you don't take action on this guy, now just think about it this way. Let's say it's not men and women, and he wrote the same exact memo, but about whites and blacks. And he said, oh, I have some evidence that blacks are more neurotic. Now, he didn't say that. So I'm not trying to have you hold that against him, okay? I'm just giving an analogy for what would you do in that circumstance. Blacks are weak, blacks are neurotic, blacks are this, blacks are that, okay? Now, the difference between men and women are more significant than the difference between races, so I'm not impugning it on him. But if he wrote that memo, you know you'd have to fire him.
Of course, yes.
Right?
Yes.
So,
yes, okay. But there are differences between men and women, right? There are things that make, there are significant benefits that women have, you know, and there are significant benefits that men have. So, for instance, when it comes to IQ, anyone who comes to you and says like men have higher IQs than women, no, okay? In terms of the G factor, general intelligence, I believe it's referred to, we're the same. Okay, but there are differences. So when it comes to spatial reasoning, multiple studies have indicated that men are better with spatial reasoning, but there are other things that women are actually stronger than men on. And so look, I think that we actually do a disservice when we pretend like, no, men and women are completely the same, we're completely the same. No, there are differences. We all have our strengths and weaknesses. And so if we're to have a genuine, sincere conversation about how to improve the workplace so there is equality, we need to keep those differences in mind. That's not to say that women are less than or men are less than, but again, we have strengths and weaknesses that we should celebrate and we should talk about. And unfortunately, we don't talk about it, and I think it is a disservice, and that's the reason why companies like Google haven't solved their equality issue.
No, it's different situations. That conversation should be had here, it should be had on conservative talk shows, it should be had on on TV and college campuses, etc. Okay? But Google is a private company, and they have an enormous number of women working there who now feel like they're going to be judged at every meeting if this is considered within the acceptable ideas. Not because of politics, but because this guy is saying women are biologically not right for these jobs. And if you say, yeah, that's acceptable, that's totally fine. Now, what have you told those women? And even if you think that that is an okay idea, well, those women don't feel what you've done to 40% of your workforce or whatever it is, right?
Yes.
And let alone, by the way, if you're running a company, how about your clients, your customers? They're 50% women. And so you have to take those things into account.
Let me be absolutely clear. I do not agree that women are not fit for these jobs. So for anyone who might think that, I just want to make sure I clarify that, right? I get your point. There should be some consequence, especially if it is discouraging women in the workplace, if they feel like they're being judged, of course. But immediately going to firing him, I think it just goes too far. Yes, if you want to suspend him, maybe, that makes sense to me. But I don't think what he wrote was meant to like destroy women in the workplace. I just think that it's being painted that way. And unfortunately, because of the way it's been handled, I don't think that an important conversation that should happen internally is gonna happen. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, look, we will certainly agree on this, Anna, which is that in an ideal world, if I'm the CEO, I pull him in it. And
right.
I have female executives there as well, and we have a conversation. And we go, hey, let me understand what you were trying to say.
Right.
And drill down. And what research are you basing this on, right? And get us, and can you see how calling women, it appears that you're calling women neurotic in general.
Right.
And that is something that they could reasonably take offense at. You're asking for a psychological safe space for men, but look at what you just did to all the women who work at Google by painting them in this, what yep. it reasonably appears to be a derogatory light to them. Fine, let's have that conversation. And maybe he's got great answers. And then you go and do that maybe in front of all of Google, right? But if he doesn't have great answers, I think you gotta take action.
Yeah, okay, that's fair. I agree with that.
All right. But it is a fascinating story.
And
one last thing we'll agree on, which is that it's not getting properly covered, right? It is,
yeah.
It's being portrayed more as a black and white issue, rather than the complicated issue that it is, even if you come out significantly against them, which I do. You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
Okay.
All right.
We gotta take a break. I know. We got a lot more stories for you guys, including similar size controversies when we come back. Back on the Young Turks, Cenk Uygur, Anna Kasparian with you. Lots of tweets, lots of stories, so I'll just do a couple. Jay says, Reince is going to publish the Trump stuff when the GOP gets serious about booting Trump's ass. I think you're right, that'll be one of the signs. Mm-hmm. Once they start going public with it, That means they think he's already done. Its arithmetic says the left needs to accept science on this. Interests, talents, and temperament aren't distributed equally. Treat people as individuals. No. Look, that is way oversimplifying. Of course we want to treat people as individuals, but you've got to have an equality of opportunity, not an equality of results. And so a level playing field doesn't mean that you tilt it in favor of blacks in the case of affirmative action or in favor of women. It means that you actually make it level so that they don't face the historic discrimination that they have faced.
Right.
So look, I just give one last example. I gave it before, but real quick. You don't need to look out for Turkish citizens of Turkish background, right? You need to look out for Turkish citizens of Kurdish background, okay? Because they are the minorities. They don't have an even playing field. So to say, oh, well, you're not treating Turks fairly, don't be ridiculous. They're in charge.
Right. I just also want to use our company as an example, because as far as I know, we don't have a policy where we're trying to like make sure there's enough women or enough men or enough this group or enough that group. But I do know that in terms of you guys hiring, you don't really care if it's a man or a woman or if it's a black person, a Latino person, a white person. We just hire people based on how talented they are and, you know, their qualifications. And guess what? We have one of the most diverse workplaces on the planet. I mean, I think every like country is represented here, and we have women in positions of power in this company as well. And so, look, I don't know.
And they have all these straw men in their heads. Like, you think that we were like, okay, let's go find a Persian. No, that's not how it works. It just happens that if you have a level playing field, you wind up having a diverse staff and company. Anyway, last one. Emma says, society has had free female labor for hundreds of thousands of years. We aren't weak. We've held up this world from the beginning. Well said, Emma. I love it. And then member shout outs are Jonathan McLean and Gretchen Hokelman. In the post game today, we will talk a little bit more about what's happening to us today. And just a little bit. The good news and et cetera, and just a tiny bit. Anyway, tytnetwork.com/join. And that also supports the show. All right, what's next?
All right. A new viral video online shows a cop pointing a gun at a couple after a routine traffic stop. The couple was apparently speeding, and then they were questioning why it is that the police officer was holding a gun to them after he had requested registration. So this stop took place on July 26th after an officer noticed a car pass him going 85 miles per hour, and that's according to the Campbell Police Department in California. After stopping the car for speeding, the officer requested the driver's license and additional paperwork. The driver and passenger spent several minutes looking for the paperwork before the officer walked back to his motorcycle to write a citation. Now, so far, both parties are in agreement over what happened, but then all of a sudden, there's massive disagreement, especially when it comes to the fact that the officer pulled a gun on the people in the car. Now, we're going to show you the video that went viral. It's not the full 9-minute video, but it'll give you a sense of what the scene was like and how scary it was, to be honest with you. Take a quick look.
Looking for the paperwork,
I understand
bro.
That. Don't move, all right?
Oh, my God.
I understand that. Don't move.
Why are you still pointing the gun at me, bro?
Do not move right now, bud.
Why are you still pointing the gun at me, though?
Do not move right now.
Record this. Why are you still pointing the gun at me, bro? My hands are right here.
I understand that.
No, you don't understand, because you still got the gun pointing at me, bro.
Relax.
No, I'm not going to relax. Get the gun off me. Serious right now.
Is that really necessary?
It is right now, okay?
His hands are both out.
He's tied for me.
Serious right now, bro.
We'll be okay.
Just you're listen. Telling no, me to relax, okay. But you have a
get
gun
your
on.
Gun off me, bro.
Wait for my backup to be here and we'll deal
backup
with it.
Backup for what? And you just keep pointing at me, bro.
Yeah, my gun's out of my holster and it's pointed at you right now.
Why? Why is it?
I don't appreciate you sticking your hands
under. You asked us for fucking registration,
you can see
bro.
Whatever's on my floor. There's nothing on my floor that he reached for.
Do you not want the paperwork?
Okay, I'm done talking to you at this point. Just
why? Why?
Keep your hands out. Don't reach for anything, okay?
I'm not reaching for nothing.
Needless for speed, the pastor was reaching for something under the seat.
Yeah, registration. You asked for registration.
Okay, so 9 minutes he pointed the gun at him. You know what that reminded me of? Immediately I thought of Philando Castile.
I know, and luckily in this case...
he wasn't black.
Well, no one got killed in this situation.
Yeah. So look, there's a lot of factors, okay? Yes, one of them could be race. But let's talk about the bigger factor, okay? The bigger factor is... As we've told you a million times, cops are told anything's a danger. Everybody's got a gun. Well, that part is true. So, by the way, we should think about that, right? And you wonder why cops are so nervous, because there's over 250 million guns in the country. Okay, and they're taught, okay, if they reach anywhere, but their registration's in the glove compartment, or maybe it fell next to their seat. I remember when I was growing up in America, and you could reach to get your registration, and you wouldn't have a gun pulled on you. Now it's gotten worse. Oh, pull the gun. And look, if I have a cop pull a gun on me, do you have any idea how nervous I am?
Oh my
and
God.
You should be enormously nervous. It doesn't matter what you look like. Because if they think you're even twitching in the wrong direction, that's it, you're dead. And you say, oh, and in part of this story in the Washington Post, they're like, even if like the guy was understandably nervous, even though it was a police officer. Even though, okay? I mean, have you not watched the news at all? And like again, it's the training. So I'm more nervous with a cop because a random person, even if they're a criminal, was not told that at any minute someone can shoot you and you should never ever take a risk and you should just put someone down immediately. Whereas we train our cops to do that. So that's why, you reached for something inside. How could you not reach for something inside a car? How do you get your registration without reaching? Like, you can't put your hands up, you can't put them down. And you think we shouldn't be nervous that the cops are gonna shoot us? That guy was understandably angry and very worried. He should have been very worried.
Excuse me. Okay, so what I found interesting was the police department's reaction to this video. They claimed that the situation ended in an amicable manner. Let's go to graphic 15. They say, we understand that it's never a comfortable position to have a gun pointed at you.
Oh, yeah.
Regardless of whether it's a police officer. Unfortunately, the length of time that the officer's gun was drawn lasted much longer than normal based on his location. Excuse me. But they claimed, all right, after that happened though, they had a talk and the man in the video who was upset at the gun pointed at him even apologized to cops. But it seems like that perspective wasn't accurate because that video was posted online by the man in the video who had the gun pointed at him. And he didn't have nice things to say about the cops, which means that it didn't end amicably. But the reaction to the video is what I think should be concerning as well. Because while people defended the man who was understandably upset, there were also individuals who were like, well, he shouldn't have been talking to the cop that way. Look, you guys have to understand when cops are justified in pulling their weapons and shooting their weapons, it's when an individual is an imminent threat, when their lives are in danger. You can curse at a police officer. Guess what? That's actually protected by our First Amendment. Okay? That is a person who's paid by taxpayer money. He is a public official. And so you are allowed to say negative things to cops. They're not allowed to shoot you or pull out their gun as a result of you saying things that are critical of them or, you know, that you might not like. It's the justifications. That's what gets to me. Really? You think it's okay for a cop to pull out a gun or potentially shoot someone because they said something negative to the cop?
So it used to be that a cop would pull out a gun and say, stop, you're under arrest, freeze, all that stuff. And would only fire if his life was in real danger. Then it became if you're in danger of getting hurt, you know, then you could pull your gun or shoot your gun. Now it's gotten to the point if your feelings are in danger of getting hurt, then you can pull the gun, right? So now, look, I know what they'll say. They'll say, no, he was reaching down. Again, I don't know where you can reach inside a car where a cop wouldn't pull a gun on you,
right?
So, and part of the reason that they train that way is if they talk back to you, then it's going to lead to chaos, and you got to show them who's boss, and you got to establish order right away. Yeah, sometimes that makes sense. If you've got a situation that's actually out of hand and it is headed down the wrong direction, I'm not saying cops have to be pleasant to everyone. Of course, there's a situation where you yell at him, where you arrest him, where you have to take physical action. And yes, there are situations where you have to pull a gun. But they should be extreme. They shouldn't be regular course of, oh, well, he said something I didn't like. Talking back to a cop is not an offense you should get executed for. And once he pulls that gun, if anything goes wrong, you die. If he perceives your hands to be going too far low or too far high, you die. And you got people out there going, well, you shouldn't have talked back to the cop. Are you insane? That's now a death penalty offense in America?
For some people, yeah, it is.
Crazy. No, they're supposed to be our cops. They're supposed to protect the community. And look, it was a freak that it was that it happened to be 9 minutes long. I'm less concerned about that. I'm less concerned about whether it was amicable or not amicable, right? And maybe the guy they parted ways fine, and then he went home and thought, no, wait a minute, that was bullshit, right? And got mad. That's not the important stuff. The important stuff is way too quick to pull the gun. And look, if you're that cop, you know he's not a real danger at that point. At a minimum, you could hold it down. You could take him out of the car. You could do 1,000 things. I know he's calling for backup today so that he's super safe. But think about that logic for 1 second. I'm going to point a gun at a guy for 9 minutes where anything can go wrong and he can die. But that's not that important to me. But or I could pull him out and I would have what? A 1% risk? I have the gun. He doesn't have anything. Right.
I
don't have backup. Since I don't have backup, it's a 1% risk to me. It's like an 80% risk to him. You know what that tells you? And when his commanding officers say it's fine, that says your life is worth so much more than a citizen's life. And that is not the message we want to send out. Okay, look, guys, if you're watching online, keep watching, because we have a lot more stories for you guys. This is a crazy day with tons of stories, especially about North Korea. So stay right here. We'll have a short break. If you're listening on Sirius Satellite Radio, we love you guys. We're just trying to give you as much show as possible. The North Korea story came in, obviously, at the end. So if you go to tytnetwork.com/join, you get the whole show, you get it ad-free, you get all the Young Turk shows, and they're all ad-free. And so check it out and support the show, and most importantly, get all of it. Okay, anytime you want, download it or stream it. Only members can do that. All right, so we're going to take a quick break here, and when we come back at tytnetwork.com/live.
Lots of great stories. You're gonna love it.
So you're gonna love it. We'll be right back. All right, back on the Young Turks. I want to update you on a poll that was relevant to a story we did earlier in the show. We had asked you guys, in the spirit of bipartisanship, should Democrats work with Republicans on tax reform? Story we did earlier. 88% of you said no. 12% said yes. And that was framed in a way that was, you know, helpful to corporate Democrats and Republicans, and still 88% of you said no. Anyway, you can keep voting on that at tytnetwork.com/taxes. All right, what do you got next, Anna?
All right, amazing story out of San Francisco where a homeowners association screwed over homeowners in a pretty wealthy area. All right. Wealthy property owners in San Francisco are fuming after they found out that due to a tax error, two individuals were able to purchase some of the land that these homes are built on. So Tina Lam and Michael Chang snatched up Presidio Terrace, the block-long private oval street lined with 35 mega-million-dollar mansions for $90,000 and change in a city-run auction stemming from an unpaid tax bill. They actually outlasted several other bidders. So this is an incredible story. When it comes to these private communities, they have to pay a certain amount of taxes every year. It's not a ton of money. However, if they don't pay it, well, then that land goes up for auction. And so these two individuals realized, oh, here's an opportunity to buy this, you know, exclusive and valuable land. And so they took advantage of it. So now this couple is actually looking to cash in, maybe charging the residents of these mansions to park on their own private street. Now, it's not their street. It's a private street that's been purchased by two people, right? And just to give you an idea of how wealthy this community is and how elite this community is, past homeowners include Senator Dianne Feinstein, Richard Blum, Nancy Pelosi. You get the picture. Some pretty prominent politicians. Now, the couple's purchase appears to be the culmination of a comedy of errors involving a $14 a year property tax bill that the Homeowners Association failed to pay for 3 decades. So the Homeowners Association didn't pay it, and that's an issue. The attorney for the Homeowners Association said the group had failed to pay because its tax bill was being mailed to the Kearney Street address used by an accountant who hadn't worked for the homeowners since the 1980s. But it's not like the Homeowners Association doesn't know that this tax exists. In fact, this is a common tax that private areas within the city have to pay every year. And so, by the way, this sale went through 2 years ago in 2015. And people are now just finding out about it because this couple is likely to find a way to cash in on their investment.
Yeah, so the final bill was actually just $994, but when you go to an auction, everybody can bid on it, and it right. got bid up to $90,000, which is probably a bargain. Now, is there anything wrong with this? No, Treasurer Tax Collector Jose Cisneros says 99% of property owners in San Francisco know what they need to do, and they pay their taxes on time, and they keep their mailing addresses up to date. So, sad day for you. Now, look, I kind of love this story. For a number of reasons. Number one, we do public streets for a reason. We do them and then taxpayers pay for them, and then some private person can't buy them because it's all of our streets. Mm-hmm. You want to do a private street, well, then somebody can buy it and you can't really cry about it. So if you wanted it, you should have paid attention and you should have bought it. You like private streets? How you like them private streets?
And there's another little layer, a little twisty twist to the story that's amazing. Up until 1948, non-whites were unable to purchase property on the street.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah. So here you have two Taiwanese investors, and they're like, we're cashing in.
Yeah, we're going to buy some property there. Okay, now look, you don't have to go back to 1948 for this to be delicious. The reason that I love this story is because some politicians, including Democrats, will privatize meters.
Yes.
And then they'll say, oh, nope, sorry, we sold that to a private corporation.
Yes.
So now they can charge you even more in fines.
Yes. Oh, I love that you brought this up. I'm so excited. Yes. You know how sometimes, you know, there'll be like a meter holiday, like Sundays, for instance. If it's a publicly owned meter, public employees that usually give out those parking violation tickets have Sundays off, right? But if you have to pay for parking at a meter on a Sunday, it's usually because that meter has been privatized or the meters on that street have been privatized. And guess what? They get to charge you whatever you want. So you'll notice a huge price disparity between public and private street meters. By the way, it's a double tax that drives me crazy, right? Look, I know that there's also a downside to free parking. You guys have sent me the articles, whatever. But in reality, our taxes have already paid for those streets. Okay, yeah. It's a regressive tax. Why am I getting double taxed to park my goddamn car? I've already paid for that goddamn street.
So now, look, I tell you a million times on the show, it's senseless and ridiculous to be bitter or envious or not like the rich just because they're rich. You don't know that they, like if they're giving money to politicians, that's a different thing, right? Or if they are, in this case, actual politicians like Senator Feinstein and Nancy Pelosi, that's a different thing. But if they're taking away our public streets in a sense and privatizing it, either with meters or sometimes with tolls, not to blame the Republicans too, Trump has a plan to privatize the highways. So you pay tolls for the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. So hell no. Now, if you're gonna do that to the middle class and you're gonna do that to the poor, then I'm not gonna cry about it if it happens to a private street filled with mega mansions. Now, if I'm them, I get annoyed, right? And I'm sure that a lot of them had almost none of them had any idea that this was gonna happen, and they probably would have paid their taxes anyway. It's a tiny amount for these people who are very
wealthy. But then you have that middleman, right? You have the homeowners association, which is a gigantic, annoying waste of time and resources, and they didn't even do their jobs properly. So, boo, homeowners association.
Yeah, and it's just look, and for now to for the Democrats, you like regulation, okay? And so this is a rule and regulation you should have followed, and you didn't follow it. So, and I'll tell you last thing on why. I kind of like this story and why it won't stick. The rich, they always find a way, right? So again, it's not to blame the rich. If it was your street, you'd be annoyed too, and you wouldn't want to pay that guy parking for the rest of your life, and he can charge you whatever he wants. And then where the hell are you going to put your car? So I get it, and he's going to hold him
for
ransom.
You're going to put your car in your like 48 car garage. That's
now, they don't have 48 car garages, right? So I get both sides of this thing, but they're going to get out of it, because the reason that why they make you pay the meters and why they privatize your roads is because you can't fight back and they'll get away with it. These guys are all powerful. They're going to fight back and they're not going to get outraged at what happens to the middle class. But when it happens to them, they're going to be like, how dare you? This is an incredible affront to what has happened, right? My guess is that they'll crush these guys. But
we'll see.
I hope not. I hope not. They were clever. And by the way, if your house gets sold in a foreclosure sale, senators don't come to your rescue.
That's right.
Okay. So this is private property, and it went up in an auction, just like a foreclosure sale. So what you should do is, hey, that's the private market. Pay the guy.
Or yes. By the way, one other thing I wanted to add, like the number of Americans that got screwed over because there was a tiny little error or discrepancy in their mortgage title or their home title, right? You think lawmakers come running to their rescue? Hell no, they don't come running to their rescue. You just lost your home. Sorry.
Yeah, or asset forfeiture seizures.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Et cetera. So in this case, when the shoe's on the other foot, it'll be interesting to see what happens. But look, man. The guy was, they were both Tina and Michael, Tina Lamb and Michael Chang. It was a clever purchase on their part. Just pay him twice, 10 times, whatever it is, and get your street back. That's the free market, baby. Mm-hmm. Next time, get a public street.
All right, one final story for you guys. The internet is abuzz after one man shared his love for his wife. His name is Robbie Tripp, and he posted on Instagram about how his wife doesn't fit the conventional beauty standards of a skinny model, but he actually absolutely loves her for the way she is. He thinks that she's insanely attractive because of how confident she is. So let me read you what he wrote, and then the response to it is where things devolve and will probably make you lose faith in humanity. So he writes, there's nothing sexier to me than a woman who is both curvy and confident. This gorgeous girl I married fills out every inch of her jeans and is still the most beautiful one in the room. Guys, rethink what society has told you that you should desire. A real woman is not a porn star or a bikini mannequin or a movie character. She's real. Look, the only issue that I have is a real woman is a real woman, period. Doesn't matter if she's a porn star or if she's skinny or overweight, whatever, who cares? Don't tell us what a real woman is. Women are women, that's it. Now, the criticism came from a plus size model, Tess Holliday, and she tweeted how there is a difference in reaction toward a man who says he loves his curvy woman versus a woman who's curvy who says she loves herself. So let me show you what she posted. Guy likes curvy woman, 16,667 faves, national news. Curvy woman likes herself, 12 faves, 48 people in your mentions talking about diabetes, which is true. but that's not, I think it goes too far to criticize him. He's just trying to be sweet to his wife, leave him alone.
To me, the more annoying quote was, she said, stop giving men trophies for doing the bare minimum. All right, but the guy's trying to be a nice guy.
Yeah.
And maybe you might even argue that he did it inartfully. Like he's basically saying, my woman is big. Okay, I'm not sure she appreciates that. I don't know. I have no idea.
I thought it was super sweet.
No, but yeah, but he's obviously trying to do the right thing. Get off his ass.
Yeah.
Right? So she's all over him. Oh, my, now you want a trophy? Yeah, kind of, because I was a decent person.
I don't even think he wanted a trophy. I think he was just trying to say, like, you know,
I love her. That's not a bad thing to say.
Her, and how about we just stop buying into conventional beauty standards? Okay. So anyway.
But here comes a twist.
Then Maria Kang, the so-called fit mom, gets involved, and she decides to go after Tess Holliday's criticism. Okay, so okay. Let me read you what she says.
Okay.
Did anyone read the story about a husband loving his wife regardless of size? I thought it was a sweet tribute of someone loving their spouse despite any standards. So far, so good.
No, problem.
No issue. Okay. When I see someone like Tess Holliday criticize this, it's disheartening. Tess is an obese model, not thick, plus size, or curvy, who has popularized the term F your beauty standards and should promote positivity in all forms. Okay, so what's up with like the unnecessary, like, she's obese? Like, just shut up. How about that? Just shut up.
Yeah.
How about everyone just shut up? How about everyone just leave this goddamn man alone? He wants to show affection for his wife. Move on with your life, okay? There are other more important things to comment on. I mean, it's just, I feel bad for this dude because he's like, I love my wife. And then all of a sudden you have these public figures jumping, you know, down his throat and criticizing it. Just relax. Everybody relax. Everything's going to be okay. We have a president who's about to start war with North Korea. Let's worry about that.
Okay. I like how we got so worked up he became a goddamn man. When we're on his side.
Oh yeah, I know. Sorry.
Seriously though, could you possibly expect this? He puts out a nice little thing that he thinks probably nobody's going to see. He's not a public figure. His wife's not a public figure. Ooh, nice pun there. Okay. Anyway, and he's like, "Oh, I love my wife," and they're like, "How dare you?" But then people go to war over it.
It's so stupid, okay. And it makes me so frustrated. Just
and look, and I know that Kang, Maria Kang's trying to get attention. Everybody's trying to get attention.
Yeah.
That's the world we live in. So she's like, oh, this will be a good opportunity. I'll take a point that some people will agree with and go, hey, get out of his life. We agree with that.
Right.
And then I'll turn it ugly.
Yeah.
And I'll call her obese ugly. For no reason.
Needlessly ugly. Yeah.
Right.
Anyway.
Kang kind of proved Tess's point. So by the way, I took it as Tess was, I'll defend her for a second, more talking about how our society decides to congratulate this guy. Our society jumps on and gives him all this. He didn't like his post 16,000 times. Everyone else did.
Right.
It's just our response to the target of the bullying is, oh yeah, cool, yeah, you stood up for yourself for a second, but F you. And the response to the guy who stood up and protected the normally bullied was like, what an amazing person. That's not his fault, it's society's fault.
Right, right. So look, if you wanna make a comment about that, which she started off with, I think that comment's fine, right? Because it's true. I mean, everyone's like, oh my God, he's so sweet. But if a curvy woman posts a picture of herself on Instagram wearing a bikini and she says, I love myself, she's gonna get hate, right? That's a common thing. So yeah, it's an interesting commentary on, you know, the double standard in society. But then she followed it up with, oh, he wants a trophy. He didn't ask for a trophy. He's just showing affection to his wife. And then this rando dude is now all of a sudden dealing with all these public figures chiming in and criticizing him. It's kind of unfair.
Well, the upside of this story is I figured out what I am. I'm a plus size talk show host. Okay. Anyway, I pardon the couple, but the other two are guilty. Okay. So we're done. We do a post game for you guys. We will have a Xiao Xiao discussion of some of the news about TYT today. If you've heard some of that, Xiao Xiao. Okay. TYTnetwork.com/join. Bye bye.